get to work.
You have an inside track.
My first reaction was, why am I the last to find out?
I was thinking maybe you're the first to know.
We should be housing emergency.
Hey, Josh. Well, we can deal with that when it comes up. Let's just deal with that one. Okay. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the October 7th meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Aye.
Feltzman?
I'll take those eyes.
See what you started?
Yes.
Here. Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. We'll read the items in a moment that are before the council this afternoon. I want to welcome you all here. Many of you have probably been here before. Some basic rules of procedure. We'll have these items up for council consideration. We're actually going to take them as a group. And I'll want to hear a little bit from staff and from our clerk about how we're going to handle testimony, because we do have more than one agenda item on the same subject. If you're here to testify, you just need to let our council clerk know, and she'll have you on the list of people to speak. We typically allow 3 minutes per person to speak, though with the number of people here today, I think we might want to ask people in individual testimony to try to limit your comments to 2 minutes, just so we can hear from everyone, because that's our goal, is to be able to hear from everyone that wants to speak on this issue. Speaking of that, we try to maintain the rules of Portland polite and courtesy in this room, and that is give everybody a chance to have their say, even if we don't agree with them. So if you do agree with someone and want to indicate your support for their point of view, feel free to wave a sign or give them a thumbs up or make some kind of nonverbal affirmation of their opinion. If you disagree with them, make a polite hand gesture to the contrary. But we ask that we not make vocal demonstrations in favor or against our fellow citizens' point of view in this room so that we can hear from everyone, and that's the idea. So again, we want to welcome you all and appreciate your participation in the discussion this afternoon. Carla, why don't you go ahead and read all three items that we have before us?
Item 1028, amend Affordable Housing Preservation Code to add Portland renter protections. Item 1029, amend Title 15 Emergency Code to authorize council to declare a housing emergency under specified circumstances and define duration and council powers during a housing emergency. And item 1030, declare a housing emergency to address increased homelessness, identify council powers, specify 1 year duration, waive zoning code, and authorize request to governor for an emergency declaration.
Thank you. Well, let me start with some opening comments, and I know that some of my colleagues want to do so as well. And let me start with what may seem like an incongruous moment when we're talking about housing today. But a couple of months ago, I had this extraordinary opportunity to go to the Vatican at the invitation of Pope Francis to talk about climate change and human suffering. And there were about 60 mayors from around the world gathered in a little group in front of the Pope while he was speaking with us. And he kept referring to you world leaders. And a couple of us literally looked around, well, who came? You know, just a bunch of mayors here, right? But he meant that he knew, and that's why he convened mayors to talk about these issues, that the locus of activity and innovation is at the city level. And in fact, when you look at the issues of climate and gun violence and housing and homelessness, in all three cases, we're talking about huge issues, national issues or international issues. And yet the activity and the innovation is happening at the local level. And that's why we're here. That's why we're considering an extraordinary action of a declaration of emergency about the cost of housing and the homeless crisis in our city. Because this is where the action is. And in fact, if misery loves company, I guess we have some in this issue, because all of the West Coast mayors are dealing with these same issues. I had the opportunity while I was at the Vatican to speak with Mayor Murray about this, because Seattle is in a housing crisis as well. My friend and colleague Eric Garcetti has just had his city council consider and act on a state of emergency declaration that talks about many of the same issues there, except that the numbers are really shocking, 19,000 unsheltered homeless on a given night. So again, these are big national issues. Income inequality and the other drivers of housing, the housing crisis and the homelessness crisis, are a national problem. but it is both our responsibility and the trend that innovation and action, decisive action in this case, is happening at the local level. So when we look at these twin crises of vanishing housing affordability and heart-wrenching homelessness, I think it's good to point out that we have done a lot with the tools that we've had. We've created, what, Commissioner Fish, 13,000 housing units, affordable housing units, over the last 10 years. You know, we've done some great work, but those tools are not adequate to the emergency that we face today. So we need to be nimble, and we need to be flexible, and we need to be swifter in our response than we have typically been as a community. I don't ask the council to take up a declaration of emergency lightly. And in fact, it's something no mayor takes pleasure in declaring an emergency in his or her city. But this is one, and we have to face it that openly. There are good things, though, about declaring an emergency. The fact that you are here today, because it's galvanized a lot of people into collective action, it's brought people together in collaboration, and it's given hope, I hope, to a lot of people in this community who are up against it in terms of housing cost or who are outside waiting for help and hope. So I think this is a great opportunity for us as a city to use this declaration and the authority it brings to make a difference, and to, under Commissioner Saltzman's leadership in our discussion today, address the protection of renters who are seriously vulnerable to what's happening in our housing market. And with that, I'll turn it over to Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. Today we are here to provide some new tools to help us respond to the current housing crisis we find ourselves in, as well as to establish some renter protections in this ever-escalating rental market. We have over 1,800 people sleeping on our streets on any given night. We don't have enough affordable housing, nor do we have enough emergency shelter space to keep people safe and warm at night. So we need to do more, and that's why I appreciate so much the mayor's declaration of emergency and his proposals he's making today. And we'll also be talking about establishing some fundamental renter protections. But I did want to touch upon a few other things we are trying to deal with to address the issues of more affordable housing in our community. We have currently 1,100 new affordable units in the pipeline. These are projects that have been funded and are underway in one form or another. And this month, we will be deciding on funding for an additional 600 units of affordable housing throughout our city. The council, in the next couple of weeks, will be talking about increasing the urban renewal amount of money set aside for affordable housing investments. And let me be clear, I will be asking this council to prioritize the addition of tens of millions of dollars of additional money from sort of the PDC side of the ledger to the Portland Housing Bureau side of the ledger so it can be invested in affordable housing. And on the 28th of this month, I will be asking the council to take the first step towards a permanent citywide source of affordable housing, known as a developer impact fee. We will assess developers a fee to develop in our city to support the creation of thousands of more units of affordable housing. And finally, I did want to touch upon something that's in the works and will be coming to council, but it'll be later next year, and that's part of the comprehensive plan. We have established proposals to establish new incentives. I mean, we're using somewhat the stick approach, but we also want to use the incentive approach by being able to offer developments additional height or density in exchange for a commitment to include affordable housing in the development or to pay into an affordable housing fund, an in lieu of payment. So all these things are in the works, and it's going to be a busy October. It'll be a busy next several months as we respond to the urgency of this crisis. And I'd also like to say that the tenant protections that we will discuss soon, it's not the end of the discussion. It's, in fact, perhaps the beginning. We need to make sure that tenants get more help to enforce their rights. And that is why, with the mayor and Chair Kefouri's announcement last week of some $30 million of additional funding for affordable housing in this year's proposed budgets, there is an amount for a legal tenant enforcement team. And we see this legal enforcement team as indispensable to the tenant protections that we will hopefully enact after having a hearing today and a vote next week. So thank you, Mayor. And
thank you very much. Commissioner Fish, do you have some comments?
Thank you, Mayor. I believe this is the third time that we've declared an emergency on the 7 years that I've been on this council. First was the winter storm of 2008. Second was the winter storm of 2013. And the third is the storm that is affecting so many low-income families and adults in our community that caused the mayor to announce his intention to declare a state of emergency. We're going to have a big conversation today and in the days ahead, maybe bigger than some people realize. It's not a surprise to anyone in this room that so many people want to live in our community, or that people from around the country are pouring into Portland, or that our national and local economy is changing so dramatically, leaving so many people behind. The consequences are made visible to us every day. Whether we're talking about teardowns in Boise Elliott, view corridors downtown, apartment buildings with limited parking, food carts being replaced by $750,000 condos, Airbnbs, short-term rentals, older adults forced out of their homes, homeless families and children in the North Park blocks and in our natural areas, no-cause evictions for families living on Rosa Parks Boulevard, or the need for additional shelter space for some of our most vulnerable residents. We're talking about the same thing. All these threats are part of a larger reality in Portland, a city that is changing, in a city where we collectively need to make sure there is room for everyone in our city. When cities become denser, when land becomes more scarce and more valuable, it's not those at the top that get squeezed. It's those at the bottom. That's not my opinion. That's the fact in Portland, in San Francisco, and in cities around the country. And that's why it's appropriate that this larger discussion has zeroed in on affordable housing and homelessness, and Mayor, why it is correct, in my view, for you to declare this emergency. I am glad that the Council's attention has been focused on this vital conversation, and I am grateful for the chorus of community voices who have demanded that we take action. I will support this declaration today. I will fight, I will join each of you in fighting for new funding. And I will support any reasonable proposal that relieves or prevents struggles facing those who have the least and need the help the most. And I want to close by acknowledging that because of Dan Saltzman's leadership and the conversation that the mayor has launched, and because of the tremendous advocacy of the people in this room, we have as many as 12 concrete proposals which this council is poised to act on. And they fall into one of four categories: new money, new homes, new tools, or new protections. I was honored to stand with the mayor and Dan last week to express my support for the $30 million pledge to the Home for Everyone. And I'm pleased that the mayor has chosen the plan that was developed by the community. It is a plan that has already been vetted. We don't have to reinvent the wheel, and it will make a dent in ending homelessness. I will support increasing the TIF set aside from 30 to 50%. I will support Commissioner Saltzman's ordinance, which he intends to file shortly, to dedicate all revenue from short-term rentals like Airbnb to the Housing Investment Fund so those resources can be used to replace the inventory of affordable housing we're losing. I support Commissioner Saltzman's request to fund a Nexus study, precondition to identifying a new impact fee. I support all of the market-based proposals that Dan has supported that would encourage the market to provide more affordable homes in opportunity areas across our city. And today I will support changes in the law that give renters greater protection. Council will once again this year demand that the state legislature finally act to lift the preemption on the ban against inclusionary zoning. And whether you support inclusionary zoning or not, it is offensive to our system of government to have one body declare that another cannot even take the issue up. I will work with Commissioner Saltzman and Home Forward and other partners to make sure that Section 8 voucher holders can find an affordable home in our community and are not forced to turn them back. Commissioner Saltzman and the Housing Bureau have announced that they will do a pilot to test whether we can bring down the cost of new affordable housing. And at a time when we have few resources, it makes perfect sense to find common sense ways to reduce the cost and to house more people. I also believe that we have to continue to invest in community policing and effective outreach. And we need to make sure that as we do so compassionately, we also make it clear that bad behavior on our streets will not be tolerated. And finally, I will enthusiastically support the call when it comes by Welcome Home and Jess Larson to capitalize on this moment and at some point in the future to go to the voters and to say we need a new and robust dedicated funding source to continue to find and provide and build and support homes for our most vulnerable families. Mayor Hales, thank you for your leadership in declaring an emergency. Commissioner Saltzman, thank you for the plethora of innovative ideas you put on the table to address this emergency. And I'm proud to be part of a council that is poised to do something big to address a huge problem in our community. And maybe, Mayor, if we keep faith with this exercise, the next time you meet with your mayors, you can tell them about the Portland approach to ending homelessness, and we can become the national leader in that conversation. So thank you.
Very much.
Thank you.
Comments?
I am very encouraged by my colleagues' actions and proposals. I'm encouraged by Commissioner Saltzman saying that he thinks that we might have a chance of having a new dedicated revenue source for affordable housing. I'm encouraged by the mayor saying that by declaring an emergency, we can give ourselves some tools to make it easier to house people. But one thing I don't want to do today is to let the federal government off the hook. Homelessness is not just a Portland problem, it's a national problem, particularly acute in the cities of the West Coast, but you see the same problem in New York and elsewhere. Homelessness and housing affordability are among several crises that the federal government is not facing up to. We have an infrastructure crisis. It's not just the streets of Portland, but the streets of many cities across the country that are falling apart, and the federal government does nothing. We have a climate disruption crisis, which is putting stress on our food supply and creating disruptive climate events, which have an impact on businesses and homes and governments, and the federal government does nothing. And we have an inequality crisis, which is, to a significant extent, responsible for our housing affordability problems. Portland is an attractive city for everybody to move to, including rich people. So rich people move here, and they drive up the prices for everybody else. But if there were not such a huge gap between the rich and other people, then the crisis would not be as acute. And the federal government does not act to address the inequality crisis, which it could, for example, by reforming our labor laws. So I applaud my colleagues' actions here today, but I think it's important to remember that this is not just our problem, it's the country's problem, and our country's leaders are not doing what they need to do to address this problem.
Thank
you. Chris? So I appreciate the opening statements, some of which sounded like closing statements. We are here to hear from you, the public, as to whether you think the proposals on the council agenda this afternoon are the right things to do. And I'm very much wanting to hear from you. Mayor, could you outline the process for amendments to any of the three of these, please?
So I think the order we're going to take them up in will be first the declaration, and therefore 1029, and then 1030 and 28 in that order, or the other way around, Dan?
No, that's right.
1030 and 1028. So I think what we'll want to do is, right after the staff presentation, take up any proposals for amendments that anyone has now.
On any of the three.
On any of the three, so that when people testify, you'll know that the council's already put an amendment on the table that may make it a better proposal or a worse proposal, but you'll at least get to react to what someone intends to do in terms of an amendment. So with that, I think I'd like to bring up Josh Alpert and our city attorney team to walk us through the declaration, and Mark Jolin from Home for Everyone, who leads our consortium effort with Multnomah County and the Housing Authority and City of Gresham and nonprofits, all working together the way governments and the community should. Welcome, gentlemen.
Great. Thank you. Mayor, Commissioners, Josh Alpert, Mayor's Office. Thank you for the opportunity to bring to Council this declaration of the state of emergency. It's been a few weeks full of chaos and uncertainty and long days and nights for me, for our city attorneys, for our staffers, our partners at the county, Home for Everyone, and throughout the city. And yet the chaos, uncertainty, and long days and nights are the status quo for Portlanders living on the street. The declaration we bring to you today to consider comes with a promise to all Portlanders that we can respond to an emergency in the Portland way, a way that involves each of us looking out for our fellow Portlanders, putting aside differences and digging deeper to make Portland truly a safe, dry, warm home for all our inhabitants. There is no model to follow, no playbook we can borrow. What you have before you today is the work of many people expert in housing and the issues of homelessness, aided by the compassion of others who simply know that we should be able to do more faster. I appreciate the opportunity to bring this forward for your deliberation, and we'll turn it over to Mark Jolin, Executive Director of Home for Everyone, to walk through how these new tools can expedite our work, and then I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you. Mark.
Good afternoon, Mayor, City Council members. My name is Mark Jolin. I'm the Initiative Director for Home for Everyone. You chartered a Home for Everyone a little more than a year ago to provide a shared set of priorities and strategies that could unite the ending homelessness efforts of the City of Portland, the City of Gresham, Home Forward, Multnomah County, as well as the important work that's being done by our federal and state partners and by the faith, philanthropic, and business communities. Our goal, your goal, simply put, is to prevent or end the homelessness of thousands of people who find themselves sleeping on our streets and in our shelters every night. Achieving this goal is not simple, but we knew that making progress would depend upon having a comprehensive plan with clearly articulated strategies and investment priorities for each of the critical dimensions of the problem of homelessness: access to housing, economic opportunity, health care, and the need for basic safety while experiencing homelessness, what we call safety off the streets. With direction from the executive committee, the 30-some members of the Home for Everyone Coordinating Board worked with dozens of other community partners to develop action plans which, if fully implemented, could lead to a 50% reduction in the unmet need for permanent housing in our community. What we didn't know even in January of this year when we were finalizing these plans is the depth of the crisis in our housing market and that it would disrupt so many lives so quickly, with many more people becoming homeless than we've previously experienced. With rents increasing 40% over the same four-year period as the earnings for low-wage workers declined by more than 5%, we saw a 42% one-year increase in the number of people accessing our emergency shelters. We also didn't foresee the significant rise in homelessness among some of the most vulnerable populations in our community. The recently released 2015 street count report, although showing only a small overall increase in street and shelter homelessness, documented significant increases in homelessness among children, the elderly, women, and African Americans. We know from the agencies working with these populations that the lack of affordable vacancies has made finding housing an almost insurmountable challenge for a growing number of these very vulnerable people. So even though by starting to implement the strategies and investment priorities set out in our action plans, we were able to help more people than ever end their homelessness last year, over 3,500 people. And we fully expect to exceed that number with the new initiatives already underway this year. We know from the data and from what we are seeing on our streets every day that if we're going to keep people safe and significantly reduce the number of people suffering homelessness in our community, it will take extraordinary action. We have to be able to implement our safety off the streets and permanent housing strategies more quickly and on a larger scale. That is what the state of emergency and the city and county's commitment of $30 million will allow us to do. With the authority granted by the state of emergency and the $30 million investment, we'll first be able to increase shelter options for our most vulnerable neighbors. Our first priority is always to move someone who has become homeless into permanent housing. But while that process is underway, we have to be able to offer a safe place to spend the night to those who are most vulnerable on our sidewalks. By removing the obstacles to siting shelter, we will be able to make life-saving places to sleep available more quickly. With the funding proposed, we will work with our faith and nonprofit partners to establish the projected 650 needed shelter options for women and people with disabilities. Second, we will increase our homeless prevention efforts. We know that the best and most cost-effective strategy to end homelessness is to prevent it from happening in the first place. With this funding, we will be able to help at least an additional 1,000 people avoid eviction and keep their housing. We will work with legal services to increase their ability to help tenants protect their rights, and we will work to support the implementation of Commissioner Saltzman's new proposed tenant protections. And third, we will increase the number of currently homeless people who have access to permanent housing. We know that the best shelter and the only true solution to homelessness is permanent housing. Under the state of emergency and with the designated resources, we will help more than 1,300 additional women, children, and people with disabilities who are homeless move out of our shelters, off the streets, and back into permanent housing. The action plans call for allocating an additional $10 million to build units that serve those who are homeless or at imminent risk of homelessness, and we will put special emphasis on permanent housing for people with severe mental illness who are homeless, including those who are accessing the soon-to-be-opened Unity Center. We do face a housing emergency in our community, and I'm grateful to you, Mayor, and to the members of City Council for taking this critical step. I know I speak for the Home for Everyone Executive Committee and Coordinating Board when I say that we will do everything in our power to ensure that your actions today result in real improvements in the lives of the thousands of people who are homeless in our community tonight.
Thank you both very much. Questions for our two leaders in our administration on this issue? So then let's go ahead and take up proposed amendments to the declaration, please, before we, well, before
I think
we begin
to do the, I think you were going to have an invited panel.
I am going to have an invited panel. Do you want me to do the, we can do the invited panels first and then start the amendments process and then take public testimony. You want to do it?
Yeah, I want to do an overview for the rental protections after your invited panel.
Okay, let's do that then. Let's proceed, unless there are any questions for Mark or Josh, then stand by. I'm sure there will be. And let me invite up Michael Bonacar, Stacey Bork, Israel Beyer, and Matt Morris. Just pull up one more chair if you can find one. Come on up, please, as a panel. You might have to BYO chair there, Stacey. Okay.
City attorney.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Who wants to start?
I'll start. Mr. Mayor, councilors, I'm glad to be here today. I'm Stacey Bork, Housing Services Director with Transition Projects and co-chair of the A Home for Everyone Coordinating Board. First, thank you for your attention and your action on our homeless and housing crisis. On a given night, any night, more than 1,800 women, children, and men sleep outside on our streets, in our parks, under our bridges, and in our doorways. That is 1,800 people too many. Our city and our county can do better. Over the last 4 years, we've seen the number of unsheltered women increase by 41%. One out of five children who experienced homelessness in our community last night slept on the streets. We can do better than this. In the last 2 years, we've seen the number of unsheltered African Americans increase by 48%. The wait for a city-funded shelter bed is at least 6 months. If you got on the wait list today, you would spend the fall and winter outside waiting for your name to come to the top of the list in March. We can do better than this, and we will. The Home for Everyone Coordinating Board has realistic, actionable plans. We know what to do, and now we need the resources to do it. Last year, we explained our need, put a price tag on that need, and turned those investments into action. The additional investments that came from our requests resulted in an additional 575 more people who ended their homelessness. We're ready. On behalf of the Coordinating Board, thank you again for your attention and your action.
Thank you. Who's next?
I'll go ahead.
Go ahead. Please, folks. We know you agree, but just give her a thumbs up. I do. I will, too. Thank you, Stacey. Go ahead,
Mayor, you had to stop the clapping before I...
Yeah, I know. It was... Yeah, sorry. Somebody had to get the short straw.
Mayor Harrell's commissioners, my name is Michael Bonacore, and I'm the executive director of Home Forward. I'm here today to voice my support for Commissioner Saltzman's proposal for increased renter protections. Over a year ago, we increased the amount of time that we gave new housing choice voucher recipients to find a place to live from 2 months to 4 months. As you heard from Portland Housing Bureau Director Kurt Krieger last week, the number of people who are able to successfully find a place to rent with a housing choice voucher in this community is decreasing. And for those who are successful, they need that four-month window. It's taking longer than ever for people to find a place to live. For those with a voucher renting in the private market, they remain vulnerable to rent increases. If a landlord raises rent above the maximum amount we will subsidize, the tenant has to make up that difference or find another place to live. So even the security provided by a deep subsidy is not enough to buffer renters in this crisis. And time is a precious commodity when people are forced to react. The turmoil and fear of this housing emergency shows up in our work every day at Home Forward. And it shows up in my personal life as more and more people are looking to me for answers for loved ones and friends who find themselves in disastrous circumstances, and I rarely have good answers for them. I didn't need to attend the Community Alliance of Tenants Renter State of Emergency to hear more of these stories, but I did, and it was powerful. Commissioner Saltzman, I appreciate that the proposal for increased renter protections was in direct response to what the community has asked for. And I know your staff has worked hard to figure out how to craft something meaningful that works in the face of state preemptions. Thank you. You likely know that Home Forward has a sizable portfolio of apartments that are unsubsidized, where we act more like a traditional landlord, and we do increase rents. We try to do that very thoughtfully, but that rental revenue has to keep the portfolio financially viable, so rent increases are a reality. I want to close my comments today by announcing that we've spoken to CAT about how we can support their voluntary landlord pledge, and with some small caveats, Home Forward will sign on. We hope many others will join us in recognizing that healthy profits can be made while still taking care of our community. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question. How does Home Forward decide how much to put the rent up?
Well, we look at each property individually. Our asset managers are working on developing individual property budgets at this time. And so in many cases, we will have no or small rent increases, and in other circumstances, they may be a little bit bigger. Part of the landlord pledge is that we won't raise rents more than 5% in a year. So for us, a small caveat is the timing of when our budgets take effect. And 5% will be on the high end. So we're doing analysis now to figure out how we can make those impacts as small as possible.
Thank you.
Thank you. Who'd like to be next? Israel, Matt?
Sure, I can go. I'll be fairly brief, just a little bit of historical context. I think these emergency measures are a historical event in our city. I think for the many people in this room and throughout our community that have experienced the trauma of homelessness, and for the many people that have dedicated their lives for Justice Day. So we thank you for this opportunity to be able to move forward. I think we're really at a great point in our community to be able to do this. Saying that, you know, we've got a long road to go. There are a lot of obstacles that face us. There are a lot of market forces, a lot of industries that won't be happy about the changes that are coming. So it's going to take our collective leadership to be able to do these things in an effective way and to be able to follow through. It's no time to let up on the gas on any of these efforts. So we very much appreciate the opportunity for these emergency measures. We've been calling for a lot of long-term revenue through a lot of different measures. We fully support the short-term rental fees. We support the demolition tax. We support other ways to be able to find opportunities to get permanent revenue towards housing. So I want to say this is a great time, but we've got a lot of work ahead of us, and we've got to do it together. So thank you.
Thank you. Matt, welcome.
Mr. Mayor, commissioners. My name is Matt Morris, and I am a part of the Wayfarer Ministry Team at First Congregational UCC Church downtown, just off of Park and Madison. I am not an expert in policy. I'm actually not even very much of an expert when it comes to the direct work that many of the people in this room have done with our brothers and sisters who live outside and who experience life outside. But I'm here to voice something about the reality of communities of faith in Portland. It's not typically popular in Portland for people to speak about their religious convictions, and that's fine. But for me, acknowledging the dignity of every human being is a strong religious conviction, and that is one that I share with many people who find themselves in communities of faith. This acknowledgement of the reality in Portland, not even the declaration of a state of emergency, but the recognition that there is a state of emergency and that people are on the ground doing the triage work on the streets every day and every night, is extremely valuable. And I know that there are many people in communities of faith who would gladly open their buildings to create these temporary shelters for people if that was made easier and made possible for them. But there are a couple things in my short time that I'd like to acknowledge here. That Mayor, you referenced the other drivers of this crisis. And I think it's important, speaking as a person from a religious community, that it's important that we acknowledge that there are forces within each of us that drive this forward. The reason that we continue to have these declarations every few years in some way leads me to question whether or not we acknowledge that there are certain core beliefs that we have and hold about the dignity of every person that need to be acknowledged, that no person should sleep outside, that no person should go to bed hungry, and that that becomes a strong conviction. We have to be willing to challenge the belief that many of us continue to hold that a person's worth is determined by how much money they have and how many possessions they have and what board they sit on, where they sit in this room. Our community of faith acknowledges everyone is pretty much on a level playing field here. And the more that each of us can embody that through our own traditions and our own systems of thought and belief, perhaps we won't have to declare the state of emergency in another 3 years. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you all. Questions for this panel? So, Dan, do you want to run for
seat? No, I mean, okay. If there's any questions for this panel. Yeah.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
So now, Dan, let's turn to the next item, please.
So I wanted to preview the renter protections, and then I have one panel, invited panel, and then we'll go to testimony and amendments. As we've heard, Portland is facing the highest rental increases in the nation. I think in August, our year-over-year rental increase average in Portland was 15%, and it was the highest in the nation. So we are continuing to experience very, very low vacancy rates, which is creating the true housing insecurity for many Portland renters. People are getting priced out or otherwise displaced from their neighborhoods. In fact, not a day goes by that my office does not get a call from a Portland renter who receives a large rent increase that they're not sure how they would be able to afford it. Or hear a story of someone who has received a no-cause notice to terminate a home they have lived in for years. Just yesterday, I heard from a woman on a fixed income who's resided in her apartment for more than 8 years, and she received a rent increase notice that will raise her rent 40% from $850 to $1,400 a month. As I said, she's on a fixed income. Many families are also getting notices to vacate their rental housing within just 30 days. And that's just not enough time for them to find a new place to live, let alone try to find, let alone to try to keep their kids in the same school or the same school district. It's clear that Portland renters need help. This ordinance that I'm proposing with the new tenant protections are intended to provide a safety valve for tenants and extend the notice requirements for rent increases and no-cost terminations. Currently, renters who have rented for less than a year receive only 30 days notice of a landlord choice to terminate their tenancy for no cause. The new proposed Portland policy would increase this notice to 90 days. The proposed renter protections would also, for the first time, establish a notification time when a landlord raises rents by more than 10% in a 12-month period. And again, that notification would be 90 days advance notice. 30 days is just not enough time to budget for these changes, for exorbitant rent increases that many families are facing. That's why we're proposing 90 days. When the Community Alliance of Tenants first declared a renter state of emergency, it resonated with Portlanders because so many, too many, have been affected by this rental crisis. It resonated with me as the housing commissioner, and I immediately asked our city attorneys to review the proposals that the Community Alliance of Tenants had put forward and found that Oregon law really provides local governments, i.e. us, only to go so far in our own regulations. These two tenant protection measures that I am proposing are based on the Community Alliance of Tenants' original proposals and also based on the belief of what I and I believe the city attorney's office believe we are able to do legally now to help alleviate the housing uncertainty for many. They are not a panacea to our rental crisis, but they are needed now, and we must, as a city council, fast-track these renter protections. It is also clear to me that tenants need help to enforce their rights, and the mayor and Chair Kefouri's plan to fund homelessness assistance, as I said, will involve the creation of a legal services tenant protection team, and that's a much-needed special service that I am very pleased to support and will do everything I can to get that up and running. And before we move on to public testimony or amendments, I'd like to invite up the following people to give their perspectives, and then we'll open it up. Justin Burry, the Executive Director of the Community Alliance of Tenants, Deborah Imsey of Multifamily Northwest, and Wayne Stoll, who is a private landlord. I'd like to thank all three of you for being here. I think you're all here. Yeah, okay. And I also wanted to, you know, particularly thank Deborah Imsey, who just finished up serving on 6 years on the Portland Housing Advisory Committee. So she was a one of the founding members of PHAC. So thank you for your efforts on behalf of our community. And we'll start with you, Justin.
I'm Justin Burry, Executive Director of the Community Alliance of Tenants, Oregon's only statewide, grassroots, tenant-led renters' rights organization. With over 1,000 tenant members, our mission is to educate, organize, and empower Oregon renters to demand and obtain safe, stable, and affordable rental housing. Low-income tenants, predominantly low-wage workers, families of children, people living with disabilities, seniors, and people of color are CAT's primary membership base. In Portland and the rest of Oregon, tenants face housing injustice in the form of increasing rents, discrimination, unsafe housing conditions, and the constant threat of retaliation or eviction. Portland is one of the most gentrified cities in the nation and has among the highest rates of rent increases, displacement, and no-cause evictions. Landlords and developers issuing such evictions and dramatically raising rents are forcing responsible and reliable tenants into one of the worst housing markets in our history without considering the impact on the individual tenants or our community. Portland's unprecedented low vacancy rate gives landlords more power over tenants, increasing incidents of discrimination and retaliation. These conditions make it easy for a landlord to refuse when a tenant asks for a repair and demands accounting for bogus fees or deposit charges. These challenges that renters face, especially rent hikes, evictions, and other forms of displacement, are especially dire for tenants with high barriers and members of protected classes under the Fair Housing Act. Tenants cannot wait for incremental change. We need bold, courageous action to address this human-made disaster. Building-wide, no-cause evictions are popping up like brush fires across the city, fanning the flames of displacement, and our communities continue to bleed. The flood of speculation from Wall Street, corporate landlords, and private investors buying up buildings to empty them and raise rents has dire consequences on people's health, economic stability, and their children's educational opportunities. We need real leadership from this housing commissioner, this mayor, and this city council. We are in a renter state of emergency. In CAT's 19-year history, we have never seen it this bad. Tenants are in dire distress and in need of immediate relief. Mass evictions of entire buildings, 30, 50, even 100% increases, are impacting our communities and threatening the social fabric of our city, and there is no end in sight. We can count the number of cranes in the air right now, building more luxury apartments. But how many of these new apartments will be available and affordable to low-income and even middle-income renters? When will we going to recognize that building only market-rate luxury apartments will never trickle down to lower-income tenants, no matter how many we build, despite all the zoning changes, cash incentives, and sweetheart deals we offer to developers? How long does this council think it takes to find a decent apartment in our rental market? How many affordable apartments are in your neighborhood? Likely with good schools, transportation options, low crime, and neighbors you know and trust. How long would it take you to move if you received a no-cause termination notice tomorrow? Now imagine if you had a bad credit from a foreclosure, medical debt, or student loans. Would you qualify? Imagine if you received a no-cause notice after you had asked for a repair. Would you put that landlord as a reference on your next rental application? Imagine you had a criminal record because you had been once sleeping outside and arrested from these homeless sweeps. Imagine if you had been racially profiled or a victim of this war on drugs that targets African Americans and people of color. Would you qualify for an apartment? Imagine if you made minimum wage to support your family and worked the 72 hours per week it takes to afford a modest two-bedroom apartment. Where would you find the time to move? Where would you live? Would 30, 60, or even 90 days be enough? In order to move, you have to take days off of work to find a vacancy, pay multiple application fees, hope and pray that you are finally accepted, move your family, change your children's school, find a new bus route to work, pay the deposit, first and last month's rent, pay the movers, clean the house, and pray you get even a fraction of your deposit back. How long would that process take for you? Is 30, 60, or 90 days enough? Do you have money in your savings to do that? For the majority of tenants, the answer is no. Low-income tenants, people of color, people with disabilities, working families making poverty wages, and seniors in a fixed income are being told, if you don't like it, move, which really means you are no longer welcome to live in the city. Tenants are tired and in distress, tired of moving, tired of our homes making us sick, tired of paying over half of our income on rent. Tenants are tired of being silenced out of fear, out of retribution, or a bad reference from a landlord. Tenants are tired of being told that our voices, our experience, our stories don't matter. Tenants are tired of hearing housing will have to wait. We have more important priorities right now. Tenants make up almost half of Portland's population and deserve to be heard. It's time for bold, courageous leadership from our housing commissioner, from our mayor, and from our city council. If you want to see examples of leadership, look to Chair Kafori and the County Board of Commissioners, who have committed to housing every homelessness veteran by the end of the year with a home for everyone. Look to Governor Kate Brown, who helped champion $62 million for housing in her first year. Look to Speaker Tina Kotek, who fought to include tenants with Section 8 as a protected class under the Fair Housing Act, and fought to include rentals in this year's inclusionary zoning bill, which ultimately died in the Senate. If you want to see examples of real courage, look at all the renters that are here today, despite their fear of retaliation from their landlord when they speak out. It's time to recognize that Portland is not livable, equitable, nor sustainable when tenants are being pushed out of their homes. It's time to recognize that housing is a human right and that should not be left to the underregulated free market. It's time to prioritize the needs of all Portland residents, not just the landlords, investors, tech companies like Airbnb, and developers. It's time to prioritize people over profit and recognize that everyone who lives in here has a right to the city.
Folks, let him talk. I know you agree, but let him talk, please.
We can no longer wait for incremental change or accept the breadcrumbs that are thrown to us so we can count it as a win. If the intent of this 90-day proposal is to act as the first step and building block of real change, and have the commitment of this housing commissioner, mayor, and council of enacting real immediate change, then we can support it. If the intent of this 90-day proposal is to say that you've done all you can do and go back to business as usual, then we cannot. We are calling for a moratorium or suspension of no-cause terminations for 1 year and to increase the notice period of rent increases over 5% of rent from the current 30 days to 1 year. 30, 60, or 90 days notice is not enough, either to move quickly or absorb a shocking rent increase, especially in today's disaster-like housing crisis. We will no longer accept that your hands are tied due to explicit or implicit preemption in Oregon state law. If that is the case, then demonstrate the courage and leadership necessary to either change them or challenge them. The Supreme Court of the United States has reaffirmed disparate impact under the Fair Housing Act, so let's use it. Both the City of Portland and the State of Oregon are currently compiling their analysis of impediments to affirmatively furthering fair housing. Evictions, rent hikes, displacement, and substandard housing are fair housing issues and should be treated as such. These unjust laws and policies, such as the ban on rent control, inclusionary zoning, and the no-cause evictions statute, should be challenged, just as the landlords will likely challenge this modest proposal by Housing Commissioner Saltzman. Tenants can no longer wait for our housing commissioner, mayor, and city council to act. We need bold, courageous leadership in this human-made disaster. We are in a renter state of emergency.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks, folks. Okay. Okay, folks, I'm going to ask, please, let's use hand gestures. I know there's passion, and you did a great job, Justin. Thank you. But we need to let everybody be heard. So obviously, regardless of point of view, we ought to try to keep it nonverbal. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Deborah Imsey with Multifamily Northwest, a trade association that represents owners and managers that house over 175,000 units in the state. I want to begin this afternoon by sharing how committed both I and my members are to housing. Our mission statement is promoting quality rental housing, and we were actively involved in and continue to be in the Ending Homeless Vet program that Justin just mentioned. Multifamily Northwest understands that the current extremely low vacancy housing market is causing challenges for renters looking for available units at their price range. We believe that this is a short-term market condition, exacerbated by years of underbuilding for multifamily demand that will be addressed in the long term by increasing the supply of housing at all affordable levels. There is a critical difference between using a 30-day end of tenancy notice to renovate many units in a building or after a sale, and the infrequent but important times when it is used to protect the overall safety and well-being of the residents in a unit. For example, an end of tenancy would be given under multiple tenant complaints about drug or gang activity to the manager or the police. Declining to renew the lease with a 30-day notice is a critical tool for managers, especially in cases where complaining tenants do not want to testify for fear of retaliation from that problem tenant. A 90-day notice for all lease agreements would not only put other tenants at risk, but likely result in responsible good renters moving to a place they feel safer. in recognition of the current market conditions and that supply cannot be built overnight. Multifamily Northwest can support a temporary change to end of tenancy notices in the case of a sale or major renovation. The framework around that would be a 90-day requirement for end-of-tenancy notices for multifamily buildings of five or more units if 15% or more of the units are noticed for remodeling for at least 7,500 or within 12 months of the building sale. All other end-of-tenancy notices would follow current state law, 30 under 60, 60 over a year, 30 under a year, 60 over a year. A policy review at 12 months and a hard sunset in 2 years. Regarding the second proposal before City Council, we believe that a requirement for 90-day notice on rent increases is controlled by state law and cannot be adopted at the local level. Multifamily Northwest opposes any changes to the state law regarding rent rates because rent control does not address supply and it does not achieve affordability. San Francisco is a stark example of the failures of rent control. Rents there have dramatically increased and far fewer affordable housing units have been built there compared to what has been built in Portland. Multifamily Northwest works with housing advocates through the Landlord-Tenant Coalition to develop important state housing policy and discuss current housing issues, and will continue to do so. While the new housing cannot be developed overnight, we strongly urge the Council to focus its efforts on housing policy that encourage more housing to be built faster through simplification of current tools and employing new ones. Multifamily Northwest supports. Let's improve the approval and design process for both nonprofit and private housing developers to reduce the time it takes to complete these multifamily housing projects. Revise code, create incentives that facilitate infill and affordability. Eliminate zoning restrictions that allow only single-family homes in neighborhoods and encourage row houses, triplexes, cottages, and accessory dwelling units for long-term rentals. Waive permit fees for multifamily buildings that can renovate existing space to add additional housing units. Use Airbnb funds beyond cost recovery for bond affordable housing, as was recently suggested by Mr. Krieger. Advocating for additional funding for affordable housing development, such as recording fee surcharges for 2 to 4 years. Multifamily looks forward to our continued collaboration with the city and state officials, as well as private and nonprofit developers, to increase the supply of affordable housing to our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Stoll, welcome.
Thank you. My name is Wayne Stoll. I am here representing our family. And I will only speak from personal experience because our family has owned rental properties in Portland since 1950. And in that time, we have never given a no-cause notice simply to raise rent on a unit. What we have a problem with is if we have a tenant who is a smoker in their unit. All of our properties are non-smoking. The tenant's smoking, neighbors complain. We go to the tenant and say, hey, you can't smoke in your unit. It's not me. I'm not smoking. So on we go. Tenant next door complains again. There is smoke. I see the tenant outside on their patio smoking. So we give the tenant a 30-day for-cause notice. The tenant says, it's not me. I'm not smoking. I've cured the problem if there was one. So the notice is rescinded. So then we give the tenant and can give the tenant a 30-day no-cause notice because we've got tenants, and we've had this happen, around them who are subject to secondhand smoke for days, weeks, and months. That's where the no-cause notice, 30 days, can come into play and has an effect. We also had another case recently, and this is really hard, where one of our tenants overheard a neighbor, a tenant of ours, outside who was using the worst racial slur you can think of. Our tenant approached the other tenant and asked them not to use that word because, A, there's a mixed-race couple who lives immediately next door, and, B, the other tenant of ours talking to these people has mixed-race children of her own. And she said she would appreciate it if you did not use that language I do not want my children or the neighbors subject to that kind of talk around here. The tenant said, okay, fine. As our tenant was leaving, she heard the word used again. Now, is that a reason to give a for-cause notice for somebody's language? I really don't know. I'm not an attorney, and I would have to go to an attorney and find out. But that type of language we won't put up with. And so if we had to give a 90-day notice to that tenant could then continue to use that language outside –